Hey guys, welcome back. This is Chris and Carly here talking with Sarah Sampson, and we're so excited to have Sarah with us to talk through something that's really, really important for us, and that is restorative practices. As we've started to talk more about race and equity on our podcast, especially as it comes to teenagers and educational circles, this topic of restorative practices is something that we have studied for a while at Teen Life and have really understood to be really important. But more and more school districts are starting to make this a part of how they deal with social emotional issues on those campuses. So Sarah, welcome. We're really glad you're here. If you would just tell us a little bit about what you do and what brings you here.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me. So, in my most previous incarnation, I was the social emotional learning facilitator for Keller ISD, which is a school district that serves about 34,000 students. So I helped run a department of about six teachers who, were in charge of implementing these social emotional learning programs within our schools. So social emotional learning, just for those who are listening who think, what does that even mean? It's defined by these five core competencies. So what the hope is that when kids who are going through a district that has social emotional learning programs, they're moving out of the school district with self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, relationship skills, and responsible decisions. Yeah, responsible decision making. Mm-hmm. So our hope is that those are the things that they would be exiting along with their academic work. And actually, it was through social emotional learning that I found restorative practices. And that piece has become such a passion that I am actually now out on my own in consultancy, putting these restorative circles into businesses and schools and using them also and work with just humans, because I really believe in the power of a circle and believe that this structure that restorative practice offers us really, really, really helps.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And we will post links for how to contact and get in touch with Sarah on our website. But Sarah, why don't you go ahead and kind of dive into what are restorative practices and circles? You keep saying circles. So kind of give our audience a little glimpse of what that is.
Sure. So I want to be clear also that a lot of this feels very personal. And I know that we're going to talk a little bit later about how these circles can be used for diversity, equity, inclusion work. But these practices, which feels important to name, do come from Indigenous roots. And part of my relationship to them has actually been part of my own journey of getting in touch with my own personal social identity and relearning, remembering what it's like to be a human who sits in a circle, because that's really in so many ways our roots. We look at the structures of our schoolrooms and also our business meetings, and we sit in lines, right? And as long as we're in a line, there's always going to be someone at the front and there's going to be someone at the end. And this becomes a literal visual of the power structures that become the way that we relate to one another. And so a lot of the Indigenous philosophy is about the circle or the wheel, where there's really no beginning, no end, no top, no bottom, no above, below, front or back. There's equity within this circle. So really, I just want to name that really is where these circles began. It was sitting around the fire. It was problem solving, community building, and repairing harm. This specific work, restorative practices, really came to our Western brains through the criminal justice system. It came as a way to repair harm. And there are questions that are used within restorative circles specifically for that. And those include first asking what happened, what were you thinking when that happened, who's been affected by what's happened, how have they been affected? And then the most important question, which is, how are you going to make things right? What are you going to do to repair the harm? And that being really the driving force behind the solution rather than how you're going to be punished. And so in schools with restorative practices, what I ask teachers a lot is, do you want the child punished or do you want the behavior to change? Because they're two very different questions. And the circle is a place where that can be explored. So that's really where it started entering into our field, was through this criminal justice system. But the circles themselves and restorative practices themselves, the foundation of them are agreements. So working off of shared agreements. And the idea being that when we have shared agreements, we can create a really safe space to have really big, bold, brave conversations. And even this idea, this visual, if you could just picture a circle, it's a ring around empty space. A ring around empty space. And a lot of my work lately, my new business is called Art of Space Holding. And this idea that this ring is a structure around empty space. And how do we hold that ring? How do we safely together, right? Not just one person can hold a circle. Mm-hmm. How do we collectively hold this ring through shared agreements that we can then enter this field together, this empty space, which hopefully we can look at things beyond right or wrong and begin to find solutions and begin to find connections. So just to give you guys the agreements, if you'd like, what it looks like to enter a restorative circle. So these agreements are what are given right at the very beginning. And this could happen around a family dinner table. This could happen in a schoolroom. This could happen in a business meeting. This can happen with kindergartners. This can happen with adults. And it works the same, and they're the same agreements every single time. And so the first agreement is respect the talking piece. So as a facilitator, I might have the group repeat this back to me and even do this gesture of offering their hands out. So respect the talking piece. And the talking piece can be anything. It's just an object that creates focus. And the idea is that the person who holds the talking piece has the attention of the circle. And what that really creates right there is safety, especially because in these circles, when we're offering an empty space to say difficult things, that there's not going to be response. There's not going to be dialogue. There's not going to be you giving me your opinion around something very tender I just offered out. I have this talking piece, and I know until it's released, I'm the one who continues to speak. The talking piece itself, as it's passed, there's a very core skill that's practiced, which is eye contact. And it's so simple, you know, passing an object to someone and having them look at you while you're doing this. It seems very simple, but you'd see just how challenged all ages are at that little moment of, I see you, we're having a moment here, there's an exchange happening. So that part is very key. In Zoom rooms, as we are doing these circles, we do something called a virtual talking piece, which is where we just have someone, once they speak, say the name of the next person who's speaking, and it's passed that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the first one's respect the talking piece. So create some focus in the space. The next one is speak from the heart. Speak from the heart. And that can sound kind of cheesy, but really all that's being asked in speaking from the heart is that we speak honestly, we speak kindly, we think about our intention with what we're saying. Is what we're saying coming from our heads, us trying to impress or entertain, or are we really saying what's true for us? And I talk about something in the circle called the vulnerability bubble. And I invite everyone to be the person to pop it, meaning that as soon as someone offers something that's really true and really raw and really real, the vulnerability bubble pops. And then everyone after that person has permission to do the same. And it's amazing. Once you see it happen, the how the space changes. So I invite people to do that. And also remind them, along with, you know, Brené Brown's vulnerability work, that vulnerability doesn't mean you have to share all your deepest, darkest secrets. Yeah. It just means you have to say what's real. Yeah, what's real. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the next one is listen from the heart. And that's twofold. Listening from the heart means obviously that while someone has the talking piece, you're not talking out in the space. You're listening. You're giving them your eyes, your ears, your body is faced and focused towards them, your whole body listening. But the second part of listening from the heart is the most important part, and it's the part that we can't see. It's the part where while you're speaking and I'm listening, I'm watching my own mental choreography. I'm watching how I might pass judgment or how I might create a story around you while you're speaking, and that's not listening from the heart. In the same way that me thinking about what I'm going to have for dinner or replaying a moment that happened earlier and traveling somewhere else in my mind is also not being with you. And so listening from the heart is this invitation to be there with non-judgment towards the speaker and deep, deep, deep curiosity. How can I stay in the state of curiosity while someone is speaking? So that's listen from the heart. So we have folks agree to that. Mm. And then the next one is what happens in the circle stays in the circle. So that's our tree of trust that we create right there. And that confidentiality piece is made really clear, especially in schools. And the thing about what happens in the circle stays in the circle does not mean that if you have some epiphany that occurs while you're here that you can't go share that with people. That's your story. You know, shout it out on the podcast, write it down in your book, tell your mom, go, tell your story. That's what we're here to do. We're here to tell our story. But don't tell the story of the person next to you. It's not your story. It's not your story to tell. We also make very clear with FERPA that if a student shares something within a school district circle that might harm themselves or another, that would be the only thing that we might take out of this circle. Though what we found is that when we open up the space, that does happen. And we don't shy away from that. You know, you open up cans of worms because there's worms in there. Mm-hmm. So it's when that happens, it happens. But just know, you know, that we've said that would come out of the circle should it need to. So there's two more and they're very simple. The next one is trust you'll know what to say. Trust you'll know what to say. And this is where I see a lot of magic occur in the circle, because the invitation is not to rehearse what it is you're going to say. So there's a prompt that's given in the circle. There's maybe 20 people, 10 people in the circle. And our tendency while others are speaking is to be, oh goodness, what am I going to say? I got to say something interesting. I got to say something funny. I got to say something that's going to like really be meaningful. I got to say the right thing. And so the invitation here is, hey, when that talking piece hits your hand, just trust you'll know what to say. Let it be messy. Let it be really messy. Let it be full of ums and incomplete thoughts. But let it be messy and let it be real. So that's trust you'll know what to say. And the last one, the very last one, is very important for especially little ones in these circles, teenagers as well, which is say just enough. Say just enough. What we're working for here is equity of voice. So everyone is speaking about the same in the circle. And the way that we do that, and I'll offer some ideas for this later, but is through sentence stems. So if you ask an open-ended question to a circle, like, what makes you most happy? There are going to be folks who don't even know where to begin answering that question. And there are going to be folks who could just go on and on and on and on and on about that question. So if you can offer a stem like, I am most happy when, complete that sentence. That's all I need you to do in this circle is to laser your response and complete this sentence. It can keep the circle moving and you can actually go much, much more deeper and have a lot more equity in what is spoken. So those are the agreements, and that's the ring around the space. Those are the things that hold us together, and they're not a to-do list, right? It's not a checklist. It's a to-be list. This is how we're agreeing to be together. And as a facilitator of someone who really desires to hold a safe space, those become my ally, and I don't have to, step over people or interrupt people with anything other than an agreement. Right? We agreed to this. So I'm going back to this agreement rather than making you feel wrong in some way, if that makes sense. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know our Teen Life facilitators will resonate with a lot with what you just said. I was just thinking about that as we were going through this. A lot of stuff we really hammer home with our facilitators. So I want to talk a little bit about kind of unpack for me, because this could obviously play out in lots of different scenarios, but let's talk about how these circles would play out in a school and then maybe around the dinner table. You kind of talked about that. I mean, like, so we have, you know, just for the interest of time, you know, what practically does a circle look like on a school campus and then at home?
Sure. So we'll start with school. And that's really where a lot of my experiences have happened, though I'm gradually taking the circles to the dinner table. So it's an evolution. But starting in the schools, the way that we suggest that folks start is that adults become first participants in the circle. So a staff is first trained, and they're the participants. They actually get the experience of being in a circle before they're asked to facilitate a circle. So that might happen in a staff meeting, and they're trained that way. From there, when they go into the classrooms and they're holding these circles with their students, the format is the safety net. They have the agreements. They have the sentence stems. The sentence stems can go anywhere, right? You can go anywhere from community building to academic conversations to then using those circles when a disagreement happens in the classroom, you bring it to the circle. But when we start these circles, what we call them green circles, so the place to start. And the green circles are the community building circles. So those are where we're asking at the beginning of the year, if possible, teens, children to sit in circles and get to know each other in this way. This really asks them to get out behind the desk as well. The desk itself, right? It's like, you can imagine it like really blocks the heart, you know, it's just right there. So sitting in that circle, there's just an embodiment of that as well, of what it means to sit in a circle together and have these conversations that have nothing to do with academics. Knowing that the research has shown with social emotional learning that when we take time to build relationships, later on, things like academic work and discipline is actually much, much easier to work with a relational foundation, right? We all know this in this work. So we would start with a community building circle, and it would be just that. And that's where they're forming relationships, where they're getting to know each other. Once that's been established, the circles can then move into academics. We can start having conversations about what we're learning. Then from there, if something were to happen, say in the global sphere, right? Or something within the microsphere of the classroom, and we need to have a difficult conversation, we can have it within the realm of this circle. But what I really encourage teachers and circle facilitators of all kind is never to start there. Those are what we call yellow or red circles, even, where we're bringing a really challenging conversation into this space. Because we want to make sure that space is a safe place first, before we start to bring difficulty into it. With the specific program that I worked on this last year within high schools and Keller ISD, is I created something called Creating a Culture of Belonging Circles, or Circling for Belonging. And this is where we really dove into these conversations around race and culture and equity. And the way that these circles were designed were that they were progressive, meaning that we started in the shallow end, we went to the deep end, and we brought it back up to the shallow end within every circle, and then with also the larger architecture of how we wanted to facilitate these conversations. So specifically, we were in history classes, right along the timeline as students were studying the civil rights movement. And so they began having conversations to begin with around belonging. So we call this appreciative inquiry. So starting first with the positive. If I want to explore this idea of exclusion, let me first explore what it feels like to be included. And so we have them explore sentence stems like, I feel I belong when. Where is a place I feel like I belong? We have them explore aspects of their social identity. We give them something called a social identity wheel that has things like race, ethnicity, socioeconomic background, gender. And this wholly inclusive wheel, they really think about these aspects of themselves, think about what parts they're really proud of, what parts people have made negative assumptions about. And what can be powerful in that circle too is talking about privilege. And what's really interesting is allowing children to talk about their lived experiences and also those who might not have a place where they can say a negative assumption has been made about me based on my. There are going to be those students who don't have an answer to that question. And that's okay. It's just that moment of recognizing, wow, I'm in a circle of people who have social identities that are challenging. Life has been challenging for them. I don't have those challenges. That's privilege. Mm-hmm. That moment is really powerful to witness. And I've done these circles with teens and I've done them with adults, these belonging circles. And our teens can go there and they want to go there. I had teens at the end of this series tell me, you know, this was the most meaningful thing I've ever done in high school. This is what I want to be doing. I want to be having these conversations. And so the willingness and the emotional intelligence and the bonds that are formed are powerful. As far as popping the vulnerability bubble, asking things like a time I felt left out was, I'm most conscious of my race when I cope with the difficulties of race that race creates for me and others by. I experience privilege by. I make others feel more welcome by. And really diving into these conversations within this safe structure. So it's worked really well. We used a pre and post survey with these circles, and we would ask things like, from a scale of 1 to 5, how safe do you feel at school? From a scale of 1 to 5, how inclusive is your school? And what we saw change on over 6 weeks in these circles were these questions such as, I feel comfortable talking about race. I feel comfortable when others talk about race. I feel comfortable speaking up when I see examples of racial inequity. We would see this change over time, that in fact, like the comfort level was rising. And that's really all we're asking for here. We're not asking to solve the world's problems, solve all the world's inequities in one circle in one high school classroom. But what we can do is empower children, students, teens to have these conversations, to give them the language and the practice to do so. So that's really the school realm. Mm-hmm.
I love that. And just that idea of the more you practice it and the more you engage with others in relationship, the more comfortable you're going to be with that. And I think that goes for adults too, of I'm sure you're about to get into what you do at home, but as a parent, it might be really uncomfortable for me to start this conversation. But the more you do it at home, the more you do it with your family, the more comfortable you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a skill. And I think that we have to remember that. We go to school to learn, right? And the first time you try to, I remember learning moles in chemistry, this like very complicated equation, and it's uncomfortable and it's okay because you've never done it before. And I think in the social sphere, we feel bad about ourselves when we try to do something and we're having difficulty. It's challenging. We're uncomfortable. But just like anything that we're trying for the first time, it's natural to feel uncomfortable. It's natural to not know what to say next. And so within that safety of the circle where we say it's okay to say the messy thing. It's okay not to say the perfect polished thing. We're all practicing here. And there's no one to stop you and say, hey, I don't like what you said. I disagree with you. No. The responsibility, which we talk about of the circle, is to just witness you, to just watch you, to just listen to you. That's their job. They're not there to fix it. or solve it or judge it or criticize it. They're there to hold you in your learning, really, because that's what we're doing here. And I know adults, really, it's harder for them to give themselves that permission, I think, right? Our teens are like, yeah, we're learning. We're in a classroom. It's what we do. Let's learn. And as adults, we're having to go to some really big learning right now. Really big learning, and giving ourselves permission to be on that messy field of learning, that uncomfortable field of learning, knowing that comfort might not be even our goal, perhaps, yet while we're learning. Mm-hmm.
So,
right, so Sarah,
go ahead, Chris.
Can you dive into a little bit of, and you've talked about sentence stems already, but how could parents use some of those at the dinner table and at their home to have some of these really difficult conversations?
Sure. So when I talk about doing these things with families, I think that it can definitely be simplified as far as agreements go. So I would simplify them for a family, right? That to have a talking piece, I think that's probably the most like essential safety piece of this situation. And to talk about what it means to speak and listen from the heart, and that also we can create safety within our family, right? That we can, mm-hmm. that we can hold each other's stories. So I think that those agreements, whether you're in a classroom or around the dinner table, become essential. And what is it like? I think back to my own family experiences and how much I would have loved to just hold a talking piece and have my parents hear me for a moment, right? Just hear me, right? Just hear me. And I think that can be a really powerful, empowering place to put our teens in, to have that opportunity to just speak and be heard. Now, what I encourage families to do as well is to build your own agreements and to create them together, to co-create agreements for these conversations, because your dynamic is your dynamic. And there might be specific things that you might want to agree to. One of them might be, we agree to stay at the dinner table. No matter how difficult this conversation gets, we're going to open up this conversation and we're going to close this conversation. It will end. It's not going to go on forever, but can we agree? Can we agree to stay with this conversation, to not get up and leave, and to stay with one another in it? Also, a little bit more of a freeform circle can be used, where you put the talking piece in the center and you request the talking piece. So rather than it traveling around the circle, it can be something that family members take turns picking up and having the focus of the group. And what we're avoiding here, which I think teens may, out in the globe can thank me for this, is no crosstalk. There's not dialogue necessarily happening here. It's an opportunity to bring in a question, a sentence stem, and to have time to really explore and answer that without my mom hopping in and giving her opinion and trying to fix it or what have you. Now, sentence stems with larger circles are really nice because they keep that circle moving. And I do think that they work well with smaller circles as well. But at the dinner table, I want to be clear that you can ask open-ended questions, right? Open-ended questions are okay in groups of four or five. It's just not quite so easy to do in a larger group. So I want to be clear that those are perfectly okay to use. Conversations about race with kiddos around the dinner table, it can be interesting to explore the family social identity. The wheel itself that we have our students look at, I mentioned a little bit earlier, but looking at what is our race? What is our ethnicity? What is our social identity? What is my gender? What does that mean for me? Other pieces on the wheel are things like first language, national origin, socioeconomic, like having these conversations of just like, this is who we are as a family. What are we proud of? What are we really proud of about who we are? Yeah. And we start there, but then let's be brave enough to go into, you know, in my life, this is what someone's made a negative assumption about me based on this. And what is the bonding there that can also occur if there is shared within a family unit, if there's shared negative assumptions? And how do we meet? How do we hold each other in that, right? Now, also as a family, how do we explore our privilege? How do we explore our privilege? And for some of us, this is a bigger as, you know, white, middle-class suburban families, having a conversation around the dinner table about privilege can be a really big, what were we given that we didn't really earn? And what does that mean for us? What can we do with it? It then becomes the bigger question. What do we do with our privilege? Right? How can we make others feel welcome? So these are these conversations that I think can become really powerful, specifically around race, to have around the dinner table. I know that this conversation is something actually that some of our teens are more ready to have, than their parents mm-hmm. are ready to have in so many ways. There's a great book out there called The I Generation, which I, highly recommend, about post-1994, children. And, so those are our teens right now. And a lot of things that it talks about are some research from the American Psychological Association about how this generation can tend to be more stressed. And we all know that depression rates are quite high for this generation. The one thing that it does talk about is that this generation is the most acceptant of differences than any previous generation, most tolerant. And when I speak that piece of data to a room of teenagers, they say, yes. Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And they're proud of it. They say, I can sit next to someone who looks different, thinks different, loves different, acts different than I do, and connect. And I don't think that my mother is so great at that. I don't think my grandfather is so good at that, but I'm good at that. And I'm proud of it. So I do think that in some ways they're more ready for these conversations. But what we can do as parents and as adults in their lives is opening up the space, right? Opening up the space to have the conversation. Mm-hmm.
So the thing that really got me excited about these practices is it's under this umbrella of restorative justice, of we want to make things right. And as you talk about these circles, that's a big part of that is making wrongs right as we
absolutely
talk to each other. And so our listeners likely might hear this and be like, this was not my public school experience. We didn't talk about these things. And I would say, you know, this is pretty new in a lot of ways, just in practice, not necessarily the concepts. But I would hope a parent or a helper listening to this would hear this and say that I want stuff like that on my kids' campus. That's really important. These practices. What would you say to a parent or a helper? How can they advocate for more of these kind of practices to be on their local campus? Because I feel like you know this is inspiring stuff. And if I was a parent, my kid going to a school, I would want to know this is the kind of stuff being talked about on a campus.
Sure. I really appreciate that question. So a lot of these programs are coming out underneath the umbrella of social emotional learning programs. So if you hear about social emotional learning through your district, and if you're not hearing about it, start asking about it. Many districts are taking this on internally. And I definitely recommend, if you don't have a social emotional learning program in your district, becoming a squeaky wheel for it, because this is typically where they come out. Mm-hmm. Some districts are putting in some restorative practices positions or bringing in people to train their staff in restorative practices specifically. As far as this idea of repairing harm through restorative practices in the criminal justice system, they call it, as you said, restorative justice, but you can also hear it referred to as restorative discipline. And that's, of course, where we're hoping to get to, where we're coming from a restorative approach rather than a punitive approach with our children, because the truth is children make mistakes and that's learning. And we want to use those opportunities, those really wonderful opportunities for learning rather than discipline. And one of the things that I really advocate for in classrooms is being able to add what's called a respect agreement in every single classroom. So this is where instead of teachers creating a set of rules for students, which I know you're like, oh no, don't take away the rules. This is all we got. No, not at all. We're not doing that. But instead of creating a top-down approach where a teacher begins the year and says, these are the rules. These are the rules for the year. Instead, they, like we said around the dinner table, we're co-creating a respect agreement. So we make a list of what it looks like student to student. What are ways that we respect each other? Teacher to student, right? What is my responsibility as a teacher? Like, what are my agreements? Do you want me to show up prepared? Do you want me to be kind? What do you expect of me? And then student to teacher. And then the last piece of it is all to the environment. So then there becomes this quadrant, if you will, of these four pieces, where instead of having a list of rules, we have a list of agreements that we created together in dialogue. Mm-hmm. And when an agreement is broken, we need to look at what was misunderstood. So we made an agreement here. You agreed to this. So
exactly.
Right. So saying you broke my rule, you're in trouble. It's, you must have not understood the agreement that you made. Do we need to revisit it? Do we need to? And then, of course, this does mean that there aren't consequences. We definitely still want to look at, especially paying attention to natural consequences. If something natural occurred, do we need to add another piece of punishment, or do we need to slow down and make sure the child understands the natural consequence that occurred based on their action? But that it's all formed and based out of these co-created agreements that students feel that they have voice and choice in, and that it's a living document, that at any time these can be refined or updated. So that's really what I see my vision would be for having that in every classroom. And the circle being a place to come to when those agreements are broken. So definitely, that's a long way to say, advocate for these programs on your campuses, in your local district. The two key words here would be social emotional learning programs and restorative practices, restorative discipline within those campuses and those districts.
Well, this is awesome. Thank you so much, Sarah. A lot of it really lines up with what Teen Life does. And so as I hear you talking, just like giving teenagers the safe environment, the freedom to speak and to be heard is so important. And I feel, unfortunately, a lot of times teenagers don't get the opportunity to do that, to really be heard without someone jumping in. And so it's been really encouraging to hear what the work that you've done and the work that some of our districts are doing to give teenagers the opportunity to do that. Chris, do you have anything to add?
No, I had the doorbell ring, and this is COVID podcasting. So just keeping it real. Yeah. Sorry about that. Sarah, thank you so much for your time. This has been great to be able to hear this talked out and concepts we've been hearing. Not necessarily theoretically, but I hear so much about what you guys do and what this is about. And it's just great to hear from you on this. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks so much, guys. Love talking with you.